From Washington, D.C., CBS News invites you to the Sheraton Carlton Hotel in the nation's capital. A luncheon to meet the new senators. Here in the Crystal Room with the newly elected members of the United States Senate are the correspondents of CBS News, Washington. First, Chief Correspondent David Schoenbrunn.
Every 2 years, part of the United States Senate, roughly one-third, is up for re-election. And out of those elections, some are defeated, many come back, and with them come some new senators. This year, out of the elections come 12 new senators, and we're happy that 9 of these freshmen have been able to clear their busy schedules, come here with their families for this traditional biennial CBS News luncheon for the new senators. Now, let's meet our guests, beginning first with the first Democrat in 30 years to win the Senate seat in New Hampshire. Senator McIntyre is here and has brought with him his secret weapon, a seasoned campaigner, Mrs. McIntyre. In the last session, Peter Dominick was a freshman congressman. Now he's a freshman senator. His opponents wonder just how far the gentleman from Colorado will carry the game of freshmanship. The oldest freshman is Millward Simpson of Wyoming. He also fought longest to get here, as we shall hear later. The new senator from Indiana was a champion debater in college, defeated only once by a girl, and she's with him today, Mrs. Birch Bayh. Senators love to investigate, and this gentleman from New Mexico should be well qualified, George Meacham, formerly of the FBI. From Hawaii comes Daniel Inoue, the first Japanese-American to join the world's most exclusive club, Aloha, Senator Inoue. A descendant of Benjamin Franklin takes a seat in the Senate, Daniel Brewster of Maryland, a popular man about Washington, as you'll hear later. They had a very long recount in South Dakota, but as Senator McGovern knows, the Constitution was only passed by one vote, and it's been around a long time. A new senator, but certainly no freshman, is Abraham Ribicoff of Connecticut. I suppose, Senator, you've held more jobs in public life than almost any man in modern times. I'm correct. Maybe Mrs. Ribicoff can check me. Your husband has been in the state of Connecticut legislator, right. Judge, governor, and here in Washington, congressman, secretary of health, education, welfare, now a senator. I wonder if I might begin by asking you, Mrs. Ribicoff, in your 31 years of marriage now, in effect, you've been married to 6 different men. Is that correct?
Well, I must say that life in the Ribicoff family has never been dull, David. And although Abe has worn 6 different hats, basically he is the same Abe I married 31 years ago as a student. However, one of the rewarding things of being the wife of a senator is that I won't have to think about packing and unpacking for the next 6 years.
At least. Tell me, where are Jane and Peter today? They couldn't come?
Well, Peter is teaching school in San Francisco, and Jane is a hard-working girl in New York. And they're both sorry they couldn't be with you today.
Thank you, Senator. You're identified most, of course, with Medicare, but I'm sure that your horizons are rather broader than that. Could you tell us briefly, one, do you think Medicare is going to get through, and then perhaps we can get on to other
things? Yes, I do think Medicare is going to get through, David. However, this is only part and parcel of my interest. I think one of the great problems we face in this nation is our population explosion and America becoming an urbanized, industrialized nation. These raise many problems that we must take a good, hard look at, realizing that we are only 37 years away from the so-called 21st century, and our thinking can't be tied down to 19th century ideas and concepts.
Senator, what do you think are the major problems of urbanized America today?
Well, the problems of transportation, how do we move people out of the complex of the big cities into the surrounding suburbia and back again? This is a grave problem that the automobile cannot solve. One of the great problems facing us is clean and enough water and clean and enough air. We pay no attention to the environments which are being poisoned all the time. and we must clean up our water supplies and clean up our air and also the problems of radiation hazards and pesticides. This is a problem that will bedevil us, and we must, as a people, do everything we can to solve such a problem. Also, one of the great problems we have is the changing social patterns which have brought such an onrush of juvenile delinquency, and we must move in these fields. We must find cures for the great killers of cancer and heart. These are some of the things that we face as a people, and above all, the great problems of education with our many, many more youngsters wanting an education, our school and college facilities not being ample enough, and the future of our nation depends upon education. David, education is power. These are some of the domestic problems that I see on the horizon, and we must face them with foresight and a realization that the frame of America in 1963 cannot wear the swaddling clothes and ideas of the 18th century when this nation was founded.
Well, Senator, 2 years ago, the New Frontier government came into existence. You were one of the first New Frontiersmen. 2 years later now, what do you see ahead in the frontiers of America?
Well, the frontiers of America, I see us hurtling into space. I see the nation's future being enlarged. I have been absolutely thrilled, and so should this nation, with President Kennedy's leadership in the Cuban crisis in October. I would foresee this leading to a new posture for the United States and additional leadership in the United States. We will go ahead now with this new power that we have, having the respect of peoples all over the world, and I would foresee steps being definitely taken to see if what has eluded mankind from the beginning of time, a world dedicated to peace, the problems of universal disarmament, can we stop the world from destroying itself in a nuclear holocaust? America's new leadership and the respect that it has had and the realization that the Soviet Union is not invincible and that the United States' strength is here, is powerful, will give us great opportunities in the whole field of foreign relations, and I see the possibility of a new day dawning for all mankind.
Well, that's a wonderful start of hope. I hope all of your colleagues are equally optimistic. Let's see now what Senator McGovern and his very nice family with us today thinks about Washington and the world. With him is my colleague, our White House correspondent, George Herman.
Senator, before we go into discussing at any great length what you think about the world in Washington, let me ask you first what you think about your family. I see you have 4/5 of your children here. Would you present them?
I'd be very happy to, Mr. Herman. This is my wife, Eleanor. I've known her since college days. My youngest daughter, Mary, on the right, and Anne, who is our oldest daughter, Terry, and Steve, who is the only boy in the family. We have a fourth daughter who is a high school junior, but she's finishing out her school year in Mitchell, South Dakota.
Where do you and your family, on the whole, where do your children especially prefer to live, in South Dakota or in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think they're somewhat torn on this. When we're here in Washington, they're counting the days until we go back to South Dakota. They've got lots of good friends in our hometown and across the state. They enjoy the swimming and the recreational activities in our home state. But they've also made the adjustment to Washington. We have some good friends here. It's true that we're a freshman senatorial family, but we've been around the national capital for quite a while. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to spend time in our home state, but it's also nice to be here in Washington part of the year.
Well, you mentioned that you've been on the Washington scene for quite a while. You have worked in the House of Representatives. You've been Director of Food for Peace. You've been, in other words, in the executive and now in both branches of Congress. As you come to the Senate, you bring behind you a background of having worked for the president, the executive branch. Are you going to be a sort of president-senator, or what kind of senator will you make with this background?
Well, let me say that I'm very proud and pleased of the relationship that I've had with President Kennedy. This I regard as a great personal asset. I think it's an asset to my state. that we have a member of our delegation that enjoys an effective and working relationship with the president, with the executive branch of the government. Many of the programs that South Dakota is most interested in are influenced very extensively by our relations with the executive branch of the government, with the White House. So I think it can be helpful to us that I have been able to establish an effective relationship with the White House. But I want to add that I don't intend to let that color my stand on public questions. I think that the senator from South Dakota has to think first about the interests of the people who made it possible for him to represent them in the Capitol. And as a United States senator is just that. He has to think about the national interest, but he also has to remember the people that made it possible for him to serve.
Do you foresee any particular areas of conflict at the moment between this national and state interests?
No, I don't. I think the programs that I understand the president will be recommending to the Congress are, for the most part, in the interest of the people of our state.
Which of them is most particularly, perhaps, in your state's interest?
Well, we have one problem that concerns me a great deal, and that's the loss of so many of our younger families, our young people from our state. Over the last 10 years, we have lost almost 100,000 people from South Dakota. And most of those people are in an age bracket from about 18 to 35, 36 years of age. So that I'm especially interested in the bill that is designed to conserve our youth, the Youth Conservation Bill, to provide new educational and job opportunities for them. I think that this legislation is going to get top priority as far as I'm personally concerned. I should like to think that that my office can play some small but significant part in conserving what I regard as the most precious and valuable resource of our country, and that's our young people. We have many untapped and undeveloped resources in our state. We have some idle young people. I'd like to get the two together. I'd like to see these youngsters working in the parks and the forests and on our great river reservoirs, developing some of these resources that will enable them to stay in that state and find it a good place in which to live and rear their families.
Well, let's get this youth program working first here at home. Let's start the senator's family. Mrs. McGovern, first of all, I'd like to ask you whether you feel that your family, through job changes, has moved up or down or sideways.
Well, actually, we've been very happy wherever we have been here in Washington, first in the Congress and then the executive branch and now in the Senate. I really can't say whether it's up or down. I think it is sideways. I think each of the three is equally important, perhaps.
How have the children felt about the job change?
Well, they've all had very specific ideas on what their father should or should not do, but they have made each adjustment very well.
Mary, where would you rather live, in Washington or in South Dakota?
I'd like to live in Mitchell.
Where did you leave your teeth? I see
Mitchell. You're
missing a few. Where did you leave them?
Mitchell.
And how did you lose them?
By a pop bottle.
By a pop bottle? Just popped out. And how about you? Did you play an active role in your father's campaign?
Yes, last summer while I was out there. For the first couple months of the summer, I was more or less his only secretary, and I worked in his headquarters in Mitchell for a couple months by myself.
I gather then you were strongly for this change.
Yes, I certainly was.
How about Terry? Were you for it also?
Well, at first I didn't want him to run because I thought he did a good job in Food for Peace, and there's always a risk of him losing, but later on I was glad he was going to run.
How about you, Steve? Were you glad he was going to run?
Yes, because I thought it was about time they had a Democratic senator out in South Dakota.
Wow. That sounds like a little campaign talk, Senator. You are, as we have said repeatedly on this program, a junior senator. What about the system of seniority in the Senate? Is that a big problem to you? Do you worry about it?
I don't worry about it. I I know that the seniority system raises some problems, but I don't know of any better way of handling the assignments in the Senate and the Congress. When I first came to the House of Representatives in 1957, I was told by one of the old hands around here that if I were unhappy about the seniority system when I arrived, just wait for a little while and I'd find it less objectionable.
Well, do you expect to play any role in any plans to change the Senate rules or the Senate in any way?
Well, I'm going to join with the leadership in supporting a liberalizing rule on the handling of debate filibusters.
How much of a chance do you think it stands?
I think reasonably good. I don't know whether the proposal to bring debate to an end by a three-fifths vote will prevail or a simple majority, but either one I would regard as a step in the right direction.
I'm afraid that's about all the time we have, Senator McGovern. We'd like to hear next from the new senator from Maryland, Senator Daniel Brewster and Nancy Dickerson.
With Senator Brewster is his son Danny, 7, his wife Carol, and their son Gary, who's 5. Senator Brewster, Democrat, coming from nearby Maryland, you're one of the few people who can live at home, work in the Senate, and commute to Washington. Is that what you did in your 4 years in the House of Representatives?
Nancy, it's a lot easier to say this than to do it. You cannot be two places at the same time, and in a sense, we're expected to be both places at the same time. So now, in the Senate, my wife and I will buy a home here in Washington and make this our headquarters, though we will still keep our farm back in Maryland.
Well, Mrs. Brewster, you look so lovely and feminine here on a Sunday afternoon. If I were playing What's Your Line, the last thing I'd guess is that you're a manager of a farm. As such, what does that entail?
Well, Nancy, we have 450 acres of land, 50 head of horses, and 100 head of cattle. This requires, of course, the first thing, good health, and seeing that the horses are properly trained and cared for, and that the cattle are sold at the proper time, and rotation of crops and so forth.
Do you do a lot of riding?
I ride every day. Well, the day, I say every day that I can. Of course, when I'm over here, this is impossible.
And you ride with the hunt, too, don't you?
Yes.
Well, as was well known, First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy often rides with the hunt. Have you ever ridden with her?
No, I haven't. I'd like to.
How about you, Danny? Do you ride?
Yes.
Do you have your own horse?
Well, it's not a horse. It's a pony. His name's Harvey.
Harvey. How about you, Gary? Do you ride?
Yeah.
Do you ride Harvey?
Yes.
Do you like it?
Yes.
Do you have any other animals?
Cows, horses.
What about you?
Dogs.
Well, that sounds like a real menagerie. How about you, Senator? I know you used to ride racehorses. Do you have time for that anymore?
No, I'm afraid, my public duties take all of my time, and what little time I have left I spend with the family, but there's no time for me to find myself actually on a horse anymore.
Well, Senator, as a farmer, are you satisfied with the current agricultural program?
Nancy, you ask a difficult question, because I'm certainly a supporter of the administration in most all areas. You put your finger on the one place where I differ with the administration, and in the House of Representatives, I have opposed the President's farm program. In general terms, I believe that we should have less government activity in this area of our economy. I would prefer to see us return more or less to a free farm economy. Now, I know we cannot do this overnight, but we cannot continue to have high support prices with almost unlimited production. There must be an end to this program.
Are you going to work towards this anytime soon in the Senate?
I, of course, do not know what my committee assignment will be as of now, but my approach to this will be consistent with my opposition to Mr. Freeman's program in the House of Representatives.
Do you consider the farm crisis to be the most pressing domestic issue?
No, I do not. I believe there are several issues that are infinitely more important.
Such
on
as?
The domestic front. I believe we must adopt some program to care for the tremendous costs of hospitalization for our senior citizens. In other words, I support a medical care program attached to Social Security. I believe we should have greater participation by government at all levels, local, state, and federal, in the field of education. The minds of these young men and the millions others like them are the greatest national asset we have. We should not, we must not waste this asset. A third area that I consider more important than the farm program is conservation as a whole. We need pure waters and pure air. We need to protect the few remaining areas of wilderness that we have. We must reserve open spaces in the hearts of our cities, recreation areas, watershed, wildlife. These great assets that we've allowed to be wasted in the past must now be protected for future generations.
Senator, as you begin your six-year career as a Democrat in the Senate, is there one particular thing that you would be particularly anxious to accomplish so that at the end of this term you could say, this I have done?
In general terms, I would like to believe that I have done a good job and the people that sent me to the Senate of the United States would be proud of me. To be definite, I would like to be able to make some significant contribution to the maintenance of peace in this world and the preservation of the free world.
Thank you, Senator Brewster. You, Danny, Mrs. Brewster, Gary. And now to the new senator from Indiana, Birch Bayh. With him is Charles Von Frantz.
Senator, we're delighted to have you with us today. Would you first of all introduce us to your wife and son?
Well, thank you, Mr. Von Frantz. We're glad to be here. I'm happy to introduce you to my wife, Marvella, who has been a wonderful companion to me, and my young son, Evan. Evan?
Very good to meet you both. Senator, you're only 34 years old, which makes you the second youngest of the 100 senators. Do you feel that your age is an asset or a handicap?
Well, frankly, I think that age is just an insignificant factor to be considered, that my job that I do in the Senate will be determined on whether I can produce, whether I have the capacity to learn, to be able to investigate the various issues and come up with the right solutions. I feel that anyone who comes to the United States Senate, regardless of his chronological age, has a great deal to learn, and that I'm anxious to do this.
Mrs. Bayh, I guess of all the wives of candidates in last year's elections, you were the most active. I think, as a matter of fact, you made more speeches than some of the candidates themselves. Do you intend to continue your interest in politics now that your husband is here in Washington as a U.S. Senator?
Well, I've always had such a great interest in politics that I don't feel at this point I could discontinue it. I'm looking forward very much to being in the galleries at the Senate to watch the operations there as much as possible. And I'm looking forward to being here in Washington so that I can follow politics even more closely.
Evan, as a six-year-old, I understand that you were just delighted on election day when a neighbor of yours gave you their collie dog because your father won the election. What's the dog's name?
Duffy.
I had a collie dog when I was a boy about your age, too. And I know that collies love to run and romp. Have your parents found a house with a big enough yard for Duffy to run around in?
Yes.
Does he have a doghouse?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Let's get back to politics for a moment, Senator. As I say, you are just 34 years of age, and if you don't mind my saying it, you were probably the longest shot or darkest horse of any of the candidates who actually won last November. How was it that you, a Democrat in a traditionally Republican state, running against a three-term incumbent, were able to win?
Well, I think the election proved that when you have many friends who are willing to make a maximum effort, you have a fine wife like I had who is willing to stand by your side and assist you, that you can accomplish great things, and this is by no means was my victory. We had many people helping us from all walks of life. The people of Indiana, I feel, are no different than those from any other state. They believe that issues today are serious in nature. They're complex in nature. You can't wish them away. One-syllable answers are not effective solutions to the problems of today's world. And we tried to talk, straight talk, to admit that perhaps we did not have the complete answer, but that we wanted to make an effort to find and to effect better solutions. We tried in no way to candy coat the serious problems of today's world, and I think that this perhaps had some small part to play in winning the election, because the people, I don't believe you can afford to talk down to the people today. They know the serious problems that confront us.
As a young and vigorous Democrat, can the New Frontier count on you to support the legislation that the administration proposes?
Well, I'm looking forward to supporting the great bulk of President Kennedy's program, because I believe that it is tailor-made to meet the specific problems of this day and age, the complex ones that can't be wished out of existence. But I don't believe the President of the United States wants a rubber-stamp senator, and I certainly don't intend to be one. It's up to all of us, all 100 of us in the United States Senate, to speak out when we feel that certain issues can be attacked more effectively in a different manner, and I'm certainly going to examine each issue to determine how it affects the people of my state of Indiana and to see if this is, in my opinion, the best way to solve the problem before us. This, it seems to me, is a responsibility that rests heavily on all of our shoulders in the Senate.
Personal question now, if you don't mind. As David Shorbrand mentioned at the opening of the program, you two people met for the first time under rather unusual circumstances. I believe that as the champion debater at Purdue University, you met your first and only defeat at the hands of Mrs. Bai. Would you care to tell us about that, Mrs. Bai?
Well, actually, it was not a debate. It was an extemporaneous speech contest. And we did meet in Chicago, competing against each other. And I guess it was love at first sight.
So 6 months later, Senator, you decided to take your former adversary and bring her into the Bai camp.
Well, it's sort of like losing the battle but winning the war. I felt I really won the prize.
Mrs. Bai, suppose you tell us, even though your husband is sitting right here, what you think is the secret to his success.
He worked very, very hard. He worked day and night. He never stopped for 2 straight years. And we had many, many friends throughout the state of Indiana from one side to the other and from one end to the other who were willing to go that extra mile, to put themselves in positions of trial for our sake. And he never was discouraged. Roadblocks would come up in front of him time after time, and he would just duck his head and push a little harder. Because of his great work and his inability to be discouraged and the many, many friends that stood behind us through thick and thin, we were able to be victorious.
Tell me, Mrs. Bai, we've already established the fact that you do enjoy public speaking.
Yes.
Was the campaign fun, and do you have any idea how many speeches you made for your husband?
I never kept track exactly. From the middle of May up until Election Day, I gave almost 60 speeches. I gave 13 in the last 3 days of the campaign. I did enjoy the campaign very much. Of course, like any mother, I was unhappy to have to be away from home as much as I was, but I enjoyed the campaign. I felt so strongly that Birch should be the senator from Indiana and that he would serve with great distinction that it was easy to campaign for him.
Have you been able now to make the transition back to being a housewife and a mother again?
I'm afraid not. We're in our new house, but far from settled, and we've been so busy going to so many interesting affairs here in Washington that I haven't been there quite long enough to get those last boxes unpacked and so on.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Bai, Mrs. Bai, and young Evan Bai for being with us.
Meet the new senators will continue after this pause for station identification.
Parachute jumping fills the screen as the Sunday Sports Spectacular returns today on the CBS Television Network.
A reunion is being planned for members of the old 252nd North Carolina National Guard at the time of mobilization in 1940. If you were a member of the 252nd, you are asked to contact either Dave Sherlock at 275-7901 or Jim Lewis at BR4-3606 in Greensboro. Robert Goulet, Brenda Lee, and Jackie Mason help Sophie Tucker celebrate her 75th birthday on The Ed Sullivan Show tonight at 8 o'clock on Channel 2 Greensboro.
Welcome back to this luncheon to meet the new senators. Now, here is CBS News correspondent Neil Strausser.
And with me is Senator Millward Simpson of Wyoming and his wife, Lorna. Mrs. Simpson, there are some members of the family not here. Tell us something about them.
Oh, yes, and I'm so sorry. Millward's mother is living with us here, but the weather was a little against her this morning, so she didn't come. We had our two sons and our daughter-in-law with us until yesterday, and I'm sorry they had to leave. And the reason the other lovely daughter-in-law couldn't come is because they have a brand-new baby girl, just 1 week old. Our first granddaughter, and that's a very thrilling event.
Right.
Sorry they all couldn't.
You have two grown-up sons. How many grandchildren do you have all
together? We have four grandchildren, three grandsons, and this one brand-new baby granddaughter.
The granddaughter was almost a Christmas present, wasn't
it? Yes. Just perfect.
Well, Senator Simpson, you are the oldest of our junior senators here in this room, and perhaps you also tried sooner than anyone else for the Senate. You first ran back in 1940, didn't you?
I ran against Senator O'Mahony, yes.
What happened to you then?
I got the tar beaten out of me.
And you didn't really try again until this past year.
No, I was governor of Wyoming from 1955 to 59, and then I stayed out of politics for the next 4 years and then ran for the unexpired term of Senator Thompson, who was elected in 1960, but suddenly died just before he was to have been sworn in here.
Well, what impelled you to try for the Senate after all these years again?
Well, I think my own predilection for some reform in government that's so sadly needed in a day like this, when tradition and history have gone by the board and no realistic attitude towards the future based upon what we've had in the past, and people urging me to run, friends of mine who wanted me to get into the race. We didn't like the type of liberalism displayed by our two senators from Wyoming, so we sought to displace them, and we think we will.
How would you describe your own philosophy?
I'm a conservative.
And what would you like to see done here in Washington?
Well, I'd like to see a curtailment of government expenditures. I'd like to see no tax cut until there's a commensurate cutting of the expenditures in the nation today. I'd like to see some sense in government, and government not run by whiz kids or professors, but rather by the Congress of the United States. And I believe in the coalition between the South and the West is the hope of this country of ours. And I look forward to that coalition.
Yes, there aren't too many Republican senators here in Washington. Do you think there are enough of you to do this job?
Caliber counts. I think there are enough to help do the job, let me put it that way.
Senator, what would you like to obtain here in Washington for the state of Wyoming, quite apart from national issues?
The state of Wyoming is one of the two states in the Union that has no bonded indebtedness. We have to live within our income because the Constitution prescribes that. We don't need so much except businesses in Wyoming. We have the economic climate to induce them to come, and consequently, I'll join with our Republican Governor Hansen in Wyoming and with our other representatives here to try to get good businesses for Wyoming, and they're coming in at a pretty rapid rate, and it adds to the economy of our great state.
Now, in your own background, you went to Harvard Law School, didn't you?
Yes, but I didn't turn left. I went to Harvard Law School, yes. I graduated from the University of Wyoming and then went to Harvard Law School, where I finished in 1925.
Let me ask you about this name, Millward. Where did you get it?
That's an interesting thing. My father was a lawyer. I'm a lawyer, too. My dad was guiding a hunting trip in the Teton country in Wyoming, and one of his great friends was a Millward Adams, who was then a representative to Siam, a consul to Siam. And they grew very attached, and came the fall of 1897, And you were born then, and he was out there on a hunt, and they named me Millward.
Have you always gone by the name Millward, or is there a nickname for it?
Well, there's a nickname, and the nickname is Simp.
Simp?
Yes.
Do you mind it?
No. My folks do, my mother and my wife. I don't care about it.
How do you feel about today?
I don't like it too well. I think Millward's a lovely name.
What do you call him?
Call him Millward.
Call him Millward?
Just love it.
All of your married life. How long have you been married?
You see, we were married in 1929, a very long time ago.
And now you've come to Washington, and we welcome you here.
Thank you very much.
Your road to Washington is a long one, but the next gentleman we're going to hear from has an even longer road. It's the senator from Hawaii, yes. Daniel Inouye, and with him is Paul Niven.
Senator Inouye, I noticed that when the girls in your office answer the telephone, they say, Aloha, Senator Inouye's office. Did you bring the word Aloha to Capitol Hill?
No, I think Delegate Burns, who is presently our governor, brought that. Incidentally, Aloha means hello. It also means goodbye. But most important, it means I love you.
Mrs. Inouye, are you also a Hawaiian by birth?
Yes, I was born on the island of Maui.
On cold, wintry days like this in Washington, do you long for the sun and the surf?
Yes, I do, but it's a wonderful change to be in Washington. I love Washington very much.
After a week, can you say whether a senator's life of a senator's wife is any different from the wife of a House member?
I don't think so.
More of it, maybe?
Well, I think that I've enjoyed the receptions and the welcoming parties. But I've seen my old friends from the House, and, well, I don't think there's much difference so far.
You, with the senator, took his parents, I believe, to the White House to meet President Kennedy. That must have been quite an experience for them.
Oh, it was such a great day for Dan's father, and he was so very much impressed and quite grateful to the people of Hawaii for making the day possible for him. After seeing the president, he said, I have nothing greater to look forward to. Now I can die without any regrets.
Senator, we all remember the long struggle of Hawaii for statehood. Has statehood lived up to its expectations, or are there still things that Hawaiians want and want you to bring them?
Well, naturally, like all Americans, we're hoping to better ourselves. But I would say that the greatest thing that has happened to us since we achieved statehood is not the monetary gains or the great buildings that have gone up. Now the people of Hawaii can walk the streets with their heads up high because we know today we're first-class citizens. And this, to me, is the most important thing that has happened to us.
The year you were elected to the House, I happened to be in Honolulu, and I was told that you had a political machine out there that had nothing to learn from any mainland machine. Is that true?
We're always learning.
Are politics in Hawaii very much the same as in any other state?
Oh, basically it's the same, but I think it's much more colorful in Hawaii. We have the climate for the color. We have hula dances. You don't find that in Washington, D.C., I think. I suppose
it's too cold. Couldn't you arrange that?
We could, but it'd be rather chilly for the girls to be dancing on the streets with the hula skirts on at this time of the year.
I noticed that the day you took office, the Senate rule against flowers on the floor was waived and your colleague, Senator Fong, placed a lady around your neck.
I must say that it was a pleasant shock. I knew it was against the rules, and when I turned around after I signed my name to my oath, here was Senator Fong with his lady. But I thought it was a very nice touch.
Senator Fong, I believe, is of Chinese descent, and your family was Japanese. Do you feel that the multiracial character of our new state is going to be a help to us in foreign relations, and do you expect to go overseas as an example of this?
Well, by the very geography of our islands, we're right in the center between the United States and the Far East. And as you pointed out, because of our different ethnic backgrounds, it should serve some purpose to our national cause. And we've been able to show not only the people in the United States, but the people throughout the world that it is possible for men and women of all different national origins to live together and work together and play together with very little, if any, friction. And we've found the secret in Hawaii.
Did you go overseas as a House member?
Yes, I did. I've been to Canada, to Mexico, and to the Far East.
Did you find that audiences were impressed?
They're quite surprised, and they're just going to believe it.
In many states of the mainland, it's become customary, or politicians feel it necessary, to have balanced tickets with maybe an Italian-American, a Catholic-American, a Jewish-American on the slate. Is that true in Hawaii? Do the parties feel this need?
It's not absolutely necessary, but, let's put it this way. I think it would be political suicide if you had all candidates of Japanese ancestry, all candidates of Chinese ancestry, unless all of them were exceedingly outstanding. But fortunately, as of this moment, we've never had any block voting to speak of, as you would find elsewhere.
What is the secret of this multiracial society? Why is it that everyone gets along so well in Hawaii? Is it the climate? Or?
I think the climate has something to do about it, but if I were to give credit to any one person or any one group, I would give it to the Polynesians, the Hawaiians, the original natives of the Hawaiian Islands. These men and women were extraordinary people. They have no word for race, for example. It's funny, but they just don't have it. To them, everyone is a man or a woman, or they're people. And from the very beginning, interracial, interethnic marriages were very common. As a result, today you find very few pure Hawaiians.
What is your main legislative interest going to be?
Well, I would be concerned about locally. We have our sugar interests in Hawaii. Nationally, I'm concerned about the Kennedy program on Medicare and foreign aid to education, federal aid to education. And nationally, on a national basis, I'm interested in defense and foreign affairs.
Thank you, Senator Inouye and Mrs. Inouye. Our next guest is Senator Edwin Meacham of New Mexico, and with him is CBS News correspondent Wells Church.
Well, Senator Meacham, let me introduce your wife, Dorothy, first. And then, if you don't mind, tell us where your four children are. What are they doing?
They're scattered throughout the part of the Southwest. The oldest, who is a girl, is married in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She has three little boys. Then there's one son at Fort Collins, Colorado, at Colorado State University, one at New Mexico Military Institute at Roswell, New Mexico, and the other one at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces.
The last two, I believe, are twins.
Yes,
aren't they?
That's right.
Senator, you've done a lot of campaigning in New Mexico. Let's run through it a little bit. You started out running for district attorney, I believe, somewhere.
Yes, that's right.
And then what followed?
Then I ran for the legislature, then I ran for district attorney again, then I ran for governor twice, and then ran for the United States Senate, then ran for governor three more times.
What's your batting average on wins and losses?
It's about 50%.
Well, that's not bad for a Republican in New Mexico. Tell me a little bit about the area and what it's going to mean to you and your work here in the United States Senate.
Of course, we come from what has been a rather sparsely settled country. We don't have any extremely large cities. The largest is Albuquerque with about 250,000 people in it. And then there are a number of communities that run around 35,000 somewhere in that neighborhood. Water development is extremely important to us. The utilization of our forest lands and our public domain and things of that nature mean a great deal to us. Actually, the Space Agency has created some real interest in New Mexico. We have the great utilization of missile sites and atomic energy development and things of that kind that have been very important to us also. Natural gas and oil mean a great deal to us, too. And these are the large items as far as the economy is concerned.
Have you put in any bid for a committee that would be concerned particularly with these matters?
Well, I've bid for probably most of them, but this is just something that will have to be determined.
You were born in, is it pronounced Alamogordo?
That's right.
You were born there?
Yes, sir.
And that has considerable history attached to it with regard to atomic energy?
Well, of course, this is identified as the place where the first bomb was detonated. It was a little bit further away. The area has never been accurately identified. But it certainly is very closely connected to the field and has been very closely connected to the space field.
That might also be of great interest to you in committee work here.
Yes, sir. It certainly will be.
Senator, you've been quoted as saying that the conservative Republican image hasn't been too well expressed, shown. What did you mean by that? Would you expound on that a bit?
Well, I think there are two aspects to this thing. I don't believe that we have shown it off as well as we could. There has been, from the opposite direction, also very definite indications made over a period of years and consistently that there is a sort of an anti-human approach to conservative government. The approach that this is really not the type of government that's concerned with people, nor their progress, nor their improvement. And these things, to my notion, are completely wrong. They could not be further from the truth as far as I'm concerned, and I think that we need to show and need to present to people the fact that the conservative government is extremely concerned in human development and in human improvement, and certainly is going to be the very strong basis and the strong foundation of our capitalist system.
Do you think the people in New Mexico sent you up here to do something about that yourself?
Well, they didn't just exactly send me, but I think they understood my position pretty well when I came up here.
Maybe they'll send you the next time.
Well, I hope so.
I want about a 10-second shot of this incredible necklace that Mrs. Meacham is wearing. If you could swing the camera over there. It comes from a mine down there, you told me, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Senator Meacham and Mrs. Meacham. Let's go on to the new senator from Colorado, Peter H. Dominick, and CBS News correspondent Roger Mutt.
This is 3/5 of the Dominick family. Senator, can you tell me who we've got and who's missing?
I'd be delighted. I have my wife, Nancy, right here, who is my main campaign support, and our daughter, Lynn, our only daughter, unfortunately, but a pretty good one at that, and our youngest son, Sandy. Our two oldest boys are both at college, and they're getting ready for exams tomorrow so that they couldn't be down here today, and that's Pete, who is 21, and our son, Mike, who's 19, shortly to be 20.
Senator, in the past few weeks since you've become a senator and after you've left the House where you served one term, I wonder if you've had time to get your bearings and climb above the great confusion that must have accompanied this opening of Congress.
No, I think it takes a little time to get ready on it. You have to have a seeing eye dog to find out your way through the tunnels and where you're going and where the committee rooms are. And, of course, we don't even have our office set up yet. We're in the same boat that a lot of the others are, at the bottom of the seniority list, so that everybody else is trooping through the office to see if they're going to take it over.
Ms. Dominick, have you been able to change gears and reorder your mental outlook from a congressman's wife to a senator's wife?
Well, it's taking a little time, I don't mind saying, Roger. It hasn't been too different, really. It was very active when we came 2 years ago in the House. And there are a great many functions, as you know, that go on the first week when you're here. And it's been a great deal of fun.
Is it a matter of partying more and enjoying it less now that...
I don't mind saying I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Lynn, what's it like now being a senator's daughter rather than a congressman's daughter? Does this elevate you in the eyes of your classmates?
Not really. It does a little bit.
Are you known as that senator's daughter?
Well... There's other senators' daughters in the school, but they know that my father's a senator.
Sandy, I guess you're getting used to babysitters by now, aren't you?
Yeah.
What, Sandy, that must be a contraction. What is your full name?
Alexander Smith Dominick.
Alexander Smith Dominick. There was an Alexander Smith who was a senator from New Jersey. Is that?
Yeah, he's my namesake.
Oh, he is. That's right. Namesake. That's right. Senator, I'd like to try a quote on you. The late Bob Kerr used to say, I'm more an Oklahoma senator than I am a national senator, and I say that's what I'm here for. How does that strike you? What adjustment do you make between the interests of Colorado and those of the nation?
Well, presumably the two interests ought to be the same. If you can do something which is going to be helpful to the state, it ought to be also helpful to the nation, because it's going to increase the economy all the way through or be a benefit to the people in it. Colorado is not a secessionist state or a different portion of the world or anything. It's part of the United States. And we hope that the two things will work together, and I think they will.
But there are always conflicting interests, aren't there? For instance, on trade. The trade bill would work, presumably, at times against Colorado's interests, wouldn't it?
Well, I thought it would. During the House debate, I know I voted against the trade bill when I was in the House. I think it could be a substantial damage to a good many of the industries throughout the country, but this was one of the troubles with the trade bill. We don't really know what industries it is going to affect or what areas. If we should, just as an example, getting out of Colorado, let down all the bars on foreign automobiles. If we put out of work the great automobile industry that we've got here, we would create tremendous unemployment in Michigan and a variety of other places. So the question is, how is it going to work? And it didn't seem to me that we had that tied down at all in the bill. This is one of the things that's bothering me.
Senator, do you come to Washington as we all have to have labels? Nobody likes labels, but apparently they're necessary. Do you come here as a middle-of-the-road or a conservative? Would you describe yourself?
I come as a person who believes very firmly in the creativeness of an individual, and that to the extent that government limits this, government is doing something which is fundamentally beyond its scope as far as the United States tradition is concerned. So I suppose if you've got to classify yourself, I would say that I was a middle-of-the-road person who believes in individual liberties and freedoms, which again is nowadays classified as conservative. In the old days, used to be classified as a liberal.
It's so hard to keep up, isn't it?
It's hard to keep up.
One thing I've heard about you is that you, as a freshman congressman on the Interior Committee and the Commerce Committee, you were a very meticulous legislator and took great pains with the legislation and the questioning of witnesses. Are you going to be able to do this as a senator?
I hope so, because basically I'm a lawyer. This is what my training and background is. And to the extent that we put forth for nationwide distribution a law which doesn't cover some of the points that you can see in advance, we're making a mistake, I think. So I try to find out what the effect of the law is going to be and whether it's written to accomplish what the purpose was. This is a difficult thing, and sometimes takes time.
We've enjoyed sitting with you. We must move on now to the newly elected senator from New Hampshire, Thomas McIntyre. With him is CBS News correspondent Robert Pierpoint.
Senator McIntyre, I want to welcome you and your political team to Washington. This team is a rather unique one. It consists mainly of your wife and your daughter, Martha. And from all I understand, they were a big part of your being here. And that brings to mind the first question, which is, how come you are here? After all, New Hampshire is a kind of a rock-ribbed Republican state, and I don't think you've had a Republican senator from your state for about 30 years, and yet this time you elected not only a Democratic senator yourself, but Governor King, another Democrat. How has it happened that New Hampshire's turned Democrat?
Well, Bob, I don't know whether New Hampshire turned Democrat or not, but this year we had a lot of good breaks. The Republicans got fighting among themselves. We worked hard, and in John King, we had a wonderful candidate for our governorship. And I know that as far as my campaign was concerned, that we had a lot of issues. President Kennedy's programs were helpful. And I had at my side one of the best politicians in the family, my sweet wife, Mrs. McIntyre.
Well, Mrs. McIntyre, I understand that you have been active in politics yourself for quite a few years. Isn't it true that you were a Democratic National Committee woman and also in the 1952 and 56 campaigns very active in your state?
Yes, that's true, Bob. In 1952, I was elected to National Committee Woman, and I worked very hard during those 4 years. And then in 1956, I had the wonderful opportunity of traveling with Governor Stevenson and Senator Kefauver nationally on the campaign. And during that experience, I hope at least that I picked up some political knowledge.
You did.
And your husband indicates you did. Well, tell me, how did you get your interest in politics in the first place?
Well, I've been married to this man quite a while, and ever since we were first married, he's always had the political bug. And maybe it was contagious. But when he ran for mayor, I tried to help what I could. And I found that it was very exhilarating, very interesting, and actually I like politics.
Martha, how about you? You're 16 years old?
Not yet.
Almost 16. Well, is it true that you helped your dad, too?
Well, I was away all this summer, but when I came back, I took an active part in his campaign. Sometimes I took my mother's place when she wasn't available to go, and I made a political speech for him at a Young Democrats meeting once.
Is that right? Well, that was helpful, too.
Oh, big hit.
Well, Martha, are you going to continue this political career?
Well, I don't think so. I think I'm looking more for a career in the art world and dramatics and so forth.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be going to school now here in Washington, is that right?
Yes, I am.
What grade are you in?
I'm in 10th grade.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go back to the senator and ask you about New Hampshire politics now. With the state still, as I understand it, is more heavily Republican. There are still more registered Republicans. Is this going to affect the way that you will vote in the Senate? Will you not be able to follow President Kennedy's program as closely as you might like?
Bob, I don't think so. New Hampshire, of course, is a small state in area, and it tends to be somewhat conservative. But I believe that the problems of New Hampshire's future revolve around its economic life, and I believe that the president's program is aimed at stirring this and helping it. I believe that in the main, I'll be able to support the administration and its programs. There are certain places that we'll have to fall away. Perhaps it'll take a little analysis on my part on this foreign aid, especially to communist countries. Any encroachments by the administration on the constitutional prerogatives of the Congress will be resisted by me.
What would you say are the biggest problems facing your state, Senator McIntyre?
The biggest problem facing New Hampshire is to get into the march of a dynamic growth, to start building and getting some of these industries, and I'd like to see New Hampshire get its fair share of these defense contracts, and this is the thing that New Hampshire needs to get some help on. I'm down here to see if they get it.
Are you, as a Catholic, as I believe you are, going to be in favor of federal aid to parochial schools as well as to public schools?
This is a very difficult subject, but I think that coming from New Hampshire, where the religiously oriented schools are a real partner in our educational problem, that I will want to work very hard to see if we can't find some solutions to give the parochial schools a hand. Now, I understand these constitutional problems pretty well.
Thank you very much, Senator McIntyre and the McIntyre team. And now over to David Schoenbrunn.
Well, gentlemen, here you are with your families, beginning a new life as senators with some 6 years ahead. Have you ever wondered where this might take you, where you go from the U.S. Senate? History tells us you could go to the White House. 14 senators have become president, from James Monroe to John Quincy Adams, through Harding, Truman, and Kennedy in our times. 19 of you have become vice president, as Lyndon Johnson can tell you. But the road to the future is a hazardous one. One senator, Frank Green of Vermont, in 1927, was shot on Pennsylvania Avenue as he walked into a gunfight between the police and bootleggers. I shouldn't think that's likely to happen to any of you. Back in 1850, Senator Foote of Mississippi pulled a gun on Benton of Missouri on the Senate floor. And in 1859, Broderick of California was killed in a duel during his re-election campaign. Sumner of Massachusetts was crippled for life by a congressman from South Carolina who beat him over the head with a cane. Men no longer carry canes. Senators, I think, no longer go armed to the Senate. Huey Long was assassinated, but that was back in Louisiana, not here in Washington, although assassination is practiced here without bloodshed. More cheerful is the sight of men who've survived for a half a century, like your dean, Carl Hayden of Arizona. This week, Russell of Georgia, his 30th year. Perhaps one of you will be the senior senator at the dawn of the 21st century in the 106th Congress. Meanwhile, thanks for spending one of your early days here with us, and good luck.
CBS Washington Report will return next week at its regular time over most of these same stations.